humiliation and hurt, but the equally familiar longing and desire. Seeing Heath again now, even from a distance, seals the deal. Beth cups her hands.
Heath! Hey, Heath!
Oh, my God! Tess clutches her, frantic, as Heath looks in their direction.
Cut it out. What are you doing?
Beth waves.
Being bold. My mom says that if you really want something, sometimes you've got to take a bull by the...
Oh, my God. He's coming this way. Tess's hand flies up to her hair.
Relax. You look great. Just act natural.
On the verge of hyperventilating, Tess watches Heath walk over the sand toward them, bare-chested, tanned, muscular, glorious. He's wearing only swim trunks, sunglasses, and one of those surfer-style necklaces.
What should she say? What should she do? How should she act?
No time to figure that out. He's here.
Hey, he says.
Remember me? I'm Beth.
Yeah, I remember.
His mouth smiles, white teeth. Tess is going to faint.
You remember her too, right?
Heath points at Tess, still smiling.
Tess, right?
She can only nod. He holds out his hand.
We never met, but you go to my school.
Tess, Hastings,
she says it with careful deliberation, lest she slip and call herself Tess Pickering out loud. That, she knows, would be her doom. What she thought was her doom, the incriminating notebook falling into the wrong hands, may not have been fatal after all. Because Heath Pickering is standing here, smiling at her. God knows what he's thinking, since she can't see his eyes, but he's here, and he's smiling, and she's going to faint or throw up, or both.
I texted you.
Tess blinks behind her own sunglasses. Is he talking to her? He can't be. He's not looking at Beth, but he must be talking to her because he didn't text Tess.
You texted Tess?
Beth asks. No, Tess says, shaking her head, trying hard not to be insanely jealous. Of course Heath texted Beth. Of course he's going to fall in love with her. Look at her. Except he's not. Looking at Beth, that is. He's still looking at Tess. Still smiling. Saying once again,
I texted you. A long time ago. Right when school got out.
Maybe she didn't get it, Beth says.
No, she did. She told me to leave her the hell alone.
Oh my God.
Tess's thoughts flash back to that night, that horrible, horrible night, back in Montclair. Lying in bed, her foot aching from the wound, her arm aching from the tetanus shot, her heart aching far worse than anything else. A text from an unavailable number. Hi, Tess. This is Heath.
It really was him?
Tess is speechless.
Why would she do that?
Beth asks incredulously and turns to Tess.
Why would you do that?
Tess just shakes her head, mute.
There was this thing that happened, Heath tells Beth, and a friend told me about it, and I felt bad, so I got her number and texted her.
I thought it was a joke, she says now, lamely.
I guess I can see why, Heath says.
Well, I can't,
Beth is shaking her head.
What happened?
Is Heath going to tell her? No. Heath, Tess's hero, says simply, nothing happened, really. It was stupid.
But what was it? Beth persists.
It doesn't matter, Heath says.
Old news. Tess nods gratefully.
So, what are you guys up to?
Heath casually grinds his big toe in the sand.
I just got off work.
What if he's not making fun of you? What if he's really a nice guy? Isn't that why you fell in love with him in the first place? It's Beth who answers Heath's question.
We're just hanging out.
Yeah?
Yeah. What are you doing?
Why?
Because my mom is having this barbecue, so we're going to go back there and have something to eat. Want to come with us?
Beth asks easily.
I have to go somewhere later, but sure, I'll come now for a while, Heath says, just as easily. Just like that. And just like that, Tess wonders if she might be able to put her worst nightmare behind her, after all.
Chapter 15. For the second day in a row, Cam's car is here in the driveway, but no one is answering the door. Kathy turns away with a frown. Is Cam inside, watching her through a crack in the blinds, avoiding her? Suspicious? Why would she be suspicious? She has no reason to believe Kathy is anyone other than who she claims to be, a concerned AA sponsor. One so dedicated she'll go to great lengths to check in on her sponsee on a holiday weekend. Far-fetched, but believable. All right, so Cam must not be home. What now? Excuse me, a voice calls. She looks up to see a trio of kids at the curb, sunglasses, towels, bare feet, obviously just coming from the beach. A handsome older teenaged boy and two pretty girls, one who looks about 17 and built, the other younger, slimmer, less certain of herself. Don't say her name. She doesn't know you, remember? And you're not supposed to know her.
Are you looking for someone?
The older-looking girl calls, and Kathy knows she was the one who spoke in the first place. Yes, Camden Hastings. I'm a friend of hers from back home, and I was in the neighborhood, so I thought I'd stop by and say hi.
I'm her daughter, Tess, the young-looking one says. She's down the street, I think, at a barbecue, so...
That's where we're headed, the other girl cuts in conveniently. If you want to see her...
All right. Just for a few minutes. Just to say hi.
Sitting on the highway, the car in park and the air conditioning turned to high, Mike fiddles with the radio and wishes he'd left Beach Haven 5 minutes earlier. Or not at all. But at least he didn't leave 1 minute earlier. Just visible in the roadway ahead, a mile from where he sits, is a massive accident. A mile. A minute. That's all it comes down to. Pure chance. Mike twists the dial past Donna Summer's Last Dance, past an aria, static, more static, a phone-in political talk show. If he hadn't taken the time to shake Ike's hand, though Ike was glowering at him, disgruntled after hearing about the separation, or to give Tess a bear hug and meet her friend Beth, static on the radio, and then, "We have Route 72 closed in both directions just east of the Garden State Parkway for a multi-vehicle accident with multiple injuries and two fatalities. Residual effects are..." Mike changes the station. It could have been him in that wreck, gravely injured, being airlifted via that helicopter buzzing overhead to some nearby hospital. Two fatalities. It could have been him, being zipped into a body bag at the side of the road. There but for the grace of God. Mike thinks about the unwitting strangers who are about to get devastating phone calls, their lives impacted by the drama unfolding before him. If it had been him, Cam would have gotten the call. She'd be widowed, Tess fatherless, and the baby would never know him at all. He'd have been erased from their lives in an instant. It wasn't him. Still, you've already erased yourself from the inner circle, their daily lives. If they continue on this path, he and Tess not living under the same roof, Cam a single mother, the baby seeing him only on scheduled visitation. Whatever happened to you and I? Mike pauses, hand on the knob. He knows this tune. I don't want to go home. It's an oldie. Southside Johnny, Cam's favorite. All those nights come rushing back at him. All those nights he'd get off the commuter train to find Cam waiting at the station, waving from behind the wheel in her pajamas, Tess strapped into the back seat, Southside Johnny on the CD player. Whenever this song came on as they drove toward their house after a long day in the city, Mike would sing along, changing the refrain. I just want to go home. Were his revised lyrics. Yes,
Their marriage was already strained even then. But he loved Cam, and he loved Tess, and he thought everything was going to work itself out, and thought love was enough. When, why did he decide that it wasn't? Selfishness, a classic midlife crisis. He started listening to his father, a know-it-all snob who never believed an underprivileged Jersey girl was good enough for his son. And to be fair, Mike listened to his own inner voice, telling him Cam wasn't the woman he thought she was back when they first met. I was right, though. She wasn't the same. She had changed, hadn't she? Or maybe she was always that skittish, distant person, and he was too blinded by love in the beginning to see it. And what about the booze? But that's over. She's not drinking anymore. She's sober now, remember? Yeah. Now. What about after she has the baby? There are no easy answers. All Mike knows is that the love is still there. He still feels it. Not blind, giddy honeymoon love. Mature love. The kind that deepens over the years, in good times and bad. Isn't that how it's supposed to be? Didn't he vow to love Cam and honor her all the days of their lives, no matter what? Good times, bad times, sickness, health, rich, poor. Didn't he vow to weather every storm by her side? Yeah, you did. And you walked away anyway. Jesus, why wasn't it ever this clear until now? Maybe he had it right, way back at the beginning when they were newlyweds, and new homeowners, and new parents. Maybe love is enough. Remembering all those nights he couldn't wait to go home with Cam and Tess, Mike feels his eyes starting to sting. I still just want to go home. He looks helplessly at the accident ahead, then over his shoulder at the line of traffic snaking as far as he can see. You're not going anywhere, anytime soon. Pop, Cam calls, stepping wearily into the house. I'm back. No reply. He must be sleeping it off in one of the bedrooms. That's fine with her. She needs more time to pull herself together after what she saw at the Pearsons' house. Now she knows. The cut foot, the friend's betrayal, the broken heart. That wasn't it. That wasn't what was meant by her earlier premonition involving Tess. Her daughter, her baby girl, is in danger. We have to leave the island. That was Cam's first coherent thought, sitting in the back seat as the police inched her toward home through endless beach traffic. Whoever took Leah Roby and Rebecca Pearson has some connection to the island. Then again, Rebecca lived here, but Leah didn't. For all Cam knows, she never visited the Jersey Shore, nor was she brought here by her abductor. She, her body, is somewhere on the mainland. Cam is as sure of that as she is that Rebecca Pearson was murdered in the past 24 hours by the same person. But the more she thinks about it, the more certain Cam is that simply fleeing the island won't keep Tess safe. For all she knows, that move could somehow put her in harm's way. There was nothing in her vision that showed Tess falling victim to the same person. But that would make sense, wouldn't it? Nothing makes sense. Shaking her head, she gets up and stops short. Why didn't she see that before? Tess's duffel bag on the floor by the door. Tess? Tess! Panic sweeps through her. Tess, are you home? She calls, racing through the house, opening doors, checking silent, empty rooms. Tess? No sign of her. No sign of Pop, either. Tess! Cam screams helplessly, standing alone in her house, clutching the sides of her skull. Oh, God, where are you? Tess! Mike's cell phone rings as he's still sitting, claustrophobic, still listening to Southside Johnny on the radio. He instantly recognizes the number and answers the phone, wondering where to begin. Cam, I'm so glad you... She cuts him off with an incoherent rush of words. What? Slow down. What are you saying? She's gone, Mike. Tess, she's gone. What? Tess, someone kidnapped her. She screams, and Mike is catapulted into an icy sea of dread. Tess, kidnapped. Oh, Mike. Kim is wailing, frantic, almost incoherent. Help me. What are we going to do? Tess, kidnapped. Mute, he founders. He cannot wrap his brain around the enormity of what she's telling him. It just doesn't make sense. It's impossible. He just saw Tess just a short time ago. She was perfectly fine. An ambulance races down the shoulder, lights flashing, siren wailing. Just a short time ago, the people in those cars up ahead were driving along on a sunny afternoon, without a care in the world. And Tess was perfectly fine. Nothing is impossible. Mike finds his voice at last. Where are you? Cam, you have to calm down.
I...
She sounds as though she's hyperventilating.
Home.
Your home? He has to get to her. He has to find his little girl. Jesus, please help me. It's okay, he tells Cam, and shifts into drive.
Please, Mike, please.
I know, I'm coming. There's nowhere to go. He's almost on the bumper of the car in front of him. He shifts into reverse, as if that can possibly help. I'll get there as soon as I can. He shifts into drive again. Then, realizing it's futile, back into park, slamming his hands on the wheel in despair. He can't move. There's no way. He's trapped. Cam is sobbing, gasping their daughter's name in his ear. Okay. Just talk to me, Cam. Breathe. Okay? Take a deep breath. He hears her inhale sharply. Hold it. Exhale. Again, he says soothingly, somehow, despite the bedlam in his head. You have to tell me what happened. Tell me everything. What happened?
I just got home, she says raggedly.
She just got home. She just got home. The words sink in.
And the house is empty. And Tess...
She's down the street. Mike cuts in as a tide of blessed relief pulls him back to reality.
What?
You haven't been home yet? Since I was there?
No, I walked in just now and saw her luggage and...
She releases an audible shudder.
What are you telling me, Mike?
Tess is okay. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. She's over at your neighbor's party with your father.
How do you know?
Because when I left, that's where she was going. She and Ike.
Are you sure?
That's what she said. Her friend was here, and she invited...
Her friend Beth?
Right, and she invited Tess over and said to bring Ike. And when I left, they were on their way.
Are you sure?
Cam still sounds edgy. Why? Tess is fine.
What if she's not over at Debbie's?
Debbie's the one having the party? She's there.
What if she's not?
Cam asks shrilly. Unreasonably, really. And an unsettling possibility creeps into Mike's head. Okay, even if she's not there, I'm sure she's fine. He tries hard to keep his voice level, to hold his suspicion at bay. I mean, there's no reason to think she's been kidnapped or...
Yes, there is. Oh, God.
What? What reason is there?
Just... Never mind. I got worried. I'm fine. I guess I got carried away.
Yeah. I guess you did. He pauses. She's not fine. She's high-strung and irrational and erratic. Why? You said there was a reason you thought she'd been kidnapped, he reminds her. Tell me. Silence on the other end of the line. Cam, you came home and Tess wasn't there, so you decided out of the blue that she'd been kidnapped? That makes no sense.
I had a vision, okay? She blurts.
You had a what? A psychic vision.
Good Lord.
Clearly, she's out of it. He opens his mouth to say something. What, he isn't sure, but he doesn't get the chance. It's as if someone shook up a bottle and took off the cap. Words are spewing out of Cam, crazy talk that's making his head spin. I've been having these visions my whole life, and they're usually about missing kids, and I never wanted to tell you because I thought you'd think I was crazy and leave me, and I guess the joke's on me because you left me anyway. And now I've had this awful vision about something happening to Tess, and she couldn't breathe. She was gasping for air, dying.
Spent, she simply stops talking. Stupefied, he's not sure where to begin. Maybe he should just drop the subject entirely. Leave it alone. No, you should ask. You need to know. Cam, have you been drinking? He hears himself ask. There. It's out there. So much. Everything is riding on her answer. It takes a moment for her to reply. When she does, her voice is taut. Mike, I'm pregnant. How can you even ask that? You sounded so out of control that I thought our daughter had been kidnapped. Because you're seeing things? Having visions? So you figure I must be drunk and out of my mind? Yes. That's exactly what he thought. Thinks. He doesn't say it, though. He doesn't have to.
So, that's what you think of me. That I was pregnant and intoxicated. That I would risk our child's life.
Cam, you have to understand why
I understand you, believe me.
No, you.
I don't have time for this right now. I have to go find our daughter, who wasn't even supposed to be here today, yet for God knows what reason, you dropped her off 2 days early and didn't even tell me.
I was going to, but Ike was there, and when he found out about the separation, he...
You told my father?
I didn't know he didn't.
Great. That's just great. I can't believe you would...
If you'd give me a chance to...
You know what? I don't have time for this. I've got to go find Tess.
Cam.
Too late. She's hung up.
Jesus. Resting his head against the steering wheel, Mike listens to an approaching siren's lament, and, on the radio, Southside Johnny, still singing about not wanting to go home. He turns the knob abruptly. An announcer is saying, "In other local news." Mike leaves it there, no longer in the mood for music. The party is in full swing, people spilling out of the house onto the deck and off the deck into the small yard below. The warm air smells of citronella and sunscreen, beer and charcoal and hot dogs. Voices talk and laugh amidst the opening keyboard chords of December 1963, Oh What a Night, on the CD player. The sun is beginning to slant into the west, nowhere near dusk yet, but the descent is underway. Soon today will be tonight, and tonight will be over. And she'll still be out there somewhere, ever evasive. No, I have to find her. Before dark. I can't let another wasted day go by. She's here someplace. The shark's tooth I found that very first day was a sign that she's here.
Oh, look, there she is now.
What? Where? Oh, false alarm. Whoever spoke was talking to someone else, about someone else. Of course, because no one here can read my thoughts. No one knows who I am, really, or who I'm looking for.
Cam, hi, where have you been?
Someone calls. Cam isn't looking her best today. Far from it. Her hair is caught back in a black headband with straggly strands escaping at her temples. Her features are drawn. She looks completely thrown together in baggy jersey shorts, keds without socks, and a white sleeveless blouse. A too-snug blouse whose buttons gape over her protruding stomach. Even from way over here, on the opposite end of the deck, it's obvious. Cam is pregnant. Well, well, well.
Pushing through the crowd on the deck, Cam is looking around worriedly, asking, "Is Tess here? Has anyone seen her? Tess? My daughter?"
Her daughter. Tess.
It figures. Just when Lucinda is desperate to get off this island, away from Randy, the whole damn world shuts down. Playing one of her favorite CDs over and over, U2's Best of 1980 to 1990, Disc 1, doesn't take her mind off the fact that she's stuck in traffic on the causeway, literally trapped between two worlds, Randy's and her own. How's that for a cosmic coincidence? Every song has meaning for her, for them. Maudlin, she forces herself to live in the pain. "All I want is you. I still haven't found what I'm looking for, with or without you." She refuses to cry. Lucinda Sloane never cries. So she sings. Wailing the lyrics along with Bono at the top of her lungs is cathartic. She turns up the volume almost as high as it goes, windows open, sea breeze in her hair, and she sings. Then, as The Edge plucks out the haunting opening guitar pings of The Unforgettable Fire, the car fills with the sound of rhythmic, heavy breathing. Startled, Lucinda turns down the volume. The breathing stops. Oh, it was part of the song, she realizes. Funny. She's heard it hundreds of times and never noticed the breathing until now. Why? And what is the panting meant to symbolize? Is someone running hard, making love, dying? It doesn't matter, really. She just wants to know. The breathing is supposed to imply passion, she decides, as Bono sings about eyes as black as coal. Passion and desire. Lucinda thinks of Randy, wonders when she'll ever see him again. Then, if. Better not to, much as she can't bear the thought of that. It's harder still to imagine seeing him again maybe a year or two down the road, with Carla, and maybe a couple of cute kids by then. Her cell phone vibrates in her pocket. She turns down the music mid-refrain. "Walk till you run, and don't look back, for here I am." "Hello? Lucinda, you're all right?" "Randy." Now, in the midst of a song about passion and eyes, in the midst of her wondering if he's out of her life forever. No. She sure as hell isn't all right. What does he want from her? Does he want her to admit she still has feelings for him? That she knows he does as well? Married or not, there was a vibe, something flickering between them, something that refuses to die. What does he want to do about it? Have an affair? "I won't do that. I won't go there." And if Randy is willing to, then he's not the man she thought he was. Maybe, she tells herself, that realization is what it will take to finally snuff the flame. "Why are you calling me, Randy?" "I knew you were heading out, and there was an accident. Tractor trailer, bunch of cars. I thought you might have..." "No," she says. "I'm all right." "Thank God." She hears him exhale shakily. "So that's it. That's all. An old friend, a good cop, checking up to make sure she hadn't been annihilated on the highway. And now that he knows." "So," she says, "is that it?" "Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to make sure you were okay." "I'll be fine," she assures him. "I just have to go home." "Yeah, me too." A pause. She wonders if he's going to say something else. Maybe. But she isn't going to let him. "Goodbye, Randy." Spotting Debbie handing out popsicles, Cam makes a beeline for her with a silent prayer. "There you are," Debbie offers Cam the box. "Where have you been?"
"Debbie, is Tess here?"
Cam impatiently waves the box away, still searching the crowd for her daughter's face. "She has to be here. Mike said she was. With Pop. Cam doesn't see either of them. But that doesn't mean..."
Who isn't here? Debbie shrugs. It's like the whole damn island heard about my barbecue. I mean, I know I told a lot of people, and I told them to invite whoever.
Debbie, Tess, have you seen her? Is she here?
I'm sure she's still around somewhere.
Still? So she was here?
The fist that's clenching Cam's lungs loosens a little, just enough so she can take a breath. But her lungs are still constricted, and will be until she lays eyes on Tess.
Yeah, she was here, a little while ago. She was sitting on a chair over there talking to Beth and some guy.
Cam takes a few steps in that direction, cranes her neck. A couple of strangers are sitting there now. Tess is nowhere in sight.
Do-dit, do-dit-dit, the four seasons sing jauntily. Do-dit, do-dit-dit.
Oh my God, are you?
Debbie asks, and Cam turns to see her looking at Cam's stomach.
You're pregnant, Debbie accuses, just as Petra and Gwen materialize.
They, too, look at Cam's stomach, which in her frantic state she neglected to camouflage. Then they look at each other, and finally, at Cam, seeking confirmation.
I need to find Tess. Has anyone... Mom?
Cam whirls around.
Tess! Thank God.
She grabs onto her daughter, holds on tight, giddy with relief.
Mom, you're crushing me.
I'm sorry. Tess grunts.
You're still crushing me.
Cam releases her, but not all the way.
Popsicle Tess, Debbie holds one out. It's grape. You like grape, right?
Sure, thanks.
Tess unwraps it.
So Cam.
She turns to see Debbie, Gwen, and Petra looking at her.
When do you do?
Petra gestures at her stomach with the orange popsicle she's holding. Cam immediately feels Tess's shoulders clench beneath her hands.
Do?
Tess echoes. She looks down, gasps.
Mom!
Tess.
You're pregnant?
You know I didn't even know her name, Frankie Valli sings.
Her name?
Well, it's not Tess. That's for damn sure.
Tess.
She might be calling herself that now, but it's her, all right. Standing there talking to the woman pretending to be her mother. Cam, now pregnant with a child of her own.
Surprise, surprise.
When Cam showed up looking for Tess, she was frantic. Far more frantic than an ordinary mother of an ordinary teenager would be under ordinary circumstances.
Well, I know why you were so worried, Cam. You thought darling daughter might have run away. You know she has a way of doing that, doesn't she?
Or maybe Cam was worried someone had found out all about their little secret and taken Tess away, brought her back where she belongs. Guess what? Someone has found out. But don't worry. I won't do anything about it just yet. It was interesting to see how Cam reacted to not knowing where Tess was for a few minutes. Imagine what it will be like for her when she loses her grip on Tess forever. That day is coming. You'd better get ready. Then again, she'll get over it. She's pregnant. She has another child coming. One who will really belong to her. Tess is looking dubiously at Cam's stomach. What is she thinking? It would make sense for a girl who's already been living as Cam's daughter to wonder how this new baby will impact her own future. Will she be cast aside? Neglected? Sent to live elsewhere? Maybe she'll revert to her old ways and run away. I'll have to keep a careful eye on her. If she tries to run, I'll be right there, waiting to catch her. When Cam's friends realize that her pregnancy is news as much to Tess as it is to them, they tactfully disperse. Left alone with her daughter, if there's such a thing as alone at a crowded party, Cam says, "We need to go home and talk about this."
"Not yet,"
Tess says evasively. She obviously needs space, still trying to absorb the news.
"I'm going to go hang out with my friends again."
She looks over the railing toward a group of kids in the yard.
Beth is among them. So, Cam realizes, is a tall, blonde guy who's catching Tess's eye. He looks familiar. One of the lifeguards, maybe? But he's a lot older. Too old to be looking up so intently at a 14-year-old, Cam thinks uneasily. I'm having fun here, Tess goes on, still focused on the guy as she licks a drip from her popsicle. And anyway, Granddad's here somewhere, so we can't just leave. Pop. Cam forgot all about that. She automatically looks for him in the throng. Where is he?
Around. Maybe he's in the house.
You haven't seen him?
I did earlier, and he was having fun talking to some people. When I got back, Debbie said he's been the life of the party.
Terrific. The life of the party. Cam glances around again, wondering where to start focusing damage control. Then it hits her. When you got back? She looks at Tess. Where were you?
Beth and I went for a walk to the beach.
There are so many things wrong with that scenario that Cam falters, wondering who exactly she should blame. Tess? Pop? Debbie? She settles on Mike. Mike, who just dumped Tess off without bothering to see if it was okay with Cam that she's home 2 days early. Did he not consider that she might have had other plans? Did he not know you don't just leave a 14-year-old unsupervised and drive away? For all he knew, Cam was away for the weekend herself. Then again, he talked to Pop, so he knew she was around. Although under certain influences, Ike has been known to see people who aren't there. Mike is always saying her father's brain is fried from all those years of hard partying. He knows better than anyone that Cam's father is no reliable guardian for Tess. He's always marveled that Cam herself got through childhood unscathed, and they certainly never considered using Pop as a babysitter for Tess. She's 14. Does she really need a babysitter? That's what Mike will say in his own defense when Cam lays into him about this. And you'll say, what? I had a vision that something horrible is going to happen to her, and I'm scared. After which Mike will accuse her of being drunk again, or worse, thinking again of the volatile conversation she and Mike just had on the phone, sick inside when she remembers what she told him and how he reacted. She asks Tess sharply, why did you come back early from the trip?
I don't know. We just weren't having a very good time. Dad was kind of...
Tess shrugs. Kind of what?
Just quiet. I guess maybe he was thinking about the baby.
Maybe he was. A beat. Then Tess asks,
so can I go?
Go where?
Talk to my friends?
After this nightmarish 24 hours, Cam wants nothing more than to leave with Tess, crawl right into bed and sleep for hours. Instead, she gets to go round up her wayward father, fend off curious stares and questions from friends she's known for mere weeks, and deal with a daughter who needs to come to terms with the pregnancy, and who, disturbingly, is once again casting a longing glance at Surfer Boy over there. Surfer Man is more like it, and he looks like he's getting ready to leave.
We really need to talk about all of this, Tess.
What? Tess asks absently.
The baby. I know you must have a lot of questions. I didn't want you to find out this way. I was going to...
I'm okay.
Look at me.
Tess does. It's all going to work out. I promise.
What about Dad? Is he...
Tess trails off. She's asking if the baby is Mike's. Cam nods slowly, her stomach turning just as it did when Mike accused her, on the phone a few minutes ago, of drinking. Somewhere in the back of her mind, she knows he has a right to question her sobriety, to doubt her tale of psychic visions.
It's what you expected from him all along. That's why you never told him. Why you never should have tried to tell him now.
Still, it hurts. Dad knows all about the baby. He's happy about being a father again, Cam assures Tess, choosing her words carefully, aware that a curious eavesdropping audience may still hover in the vicinity. This is no one's business but Cam's and Tess's. When the summer ends, everyone here, including Debbie and Gwen and Petra, friends or not, will go their separate ways.
So you're saying that Dad's the father?
Of course he's the father.
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe you...
Well, I didn't.
Okay, good.
Come on, let's just go.
Mom, please. I just want to be with my friends right now, okay? You don't have to stay if you don't want to. You can go get Granddad and go home.
I'm not leaving you here alone, Cam says sharply. Too sharply.
Tess rolls her eyes.
How old do you think I am? You left me alone the other night when you went out to dinner with your friends.
You weren't alone.
And I wouldn't be now.
Tess gestures at the crowd scene with her dripping purple ice pop. Cam shakes her head. No way is she taking her eyes off Tess tonight, or anytime soon.
So can I stay?
Go ahead, she tells Tess wearily. We'll both stay, but not for long.
Thanks, Mom.
Wow. One moment, Tess was struggling to absorb life-altering news. The next, she's glibly going off to flirt. Teenagers. But Tess is okay. She's right here, safe and sound, in one piece. That's all that matters now. Cam refuses to acknowledge the terrifying vision that led her to believe any other outcome was remotely possible.
So it's really her.
Incredible. You've looked right at her how many times and didn't even recognize her? You are so focused on that other girl, the wrong girl, that you almost missed the right one, hiding in plain sight under your nose. She's holding a grape popsicle now. The sticky purple juice drips down her hand. She lifts her wrist to her mouth, twists it, licks it. The artless gesture erases any lingering doubt. She always was a mannerless slob. What would she do if I told her, right now, that the charade is over? That I know who she really is? That she might be fooling all of these people, but not me? I know her. I've found her. She won't slip away again. She can try all she wants, but she might as well be a pogie trying to evade a great white that smells blood in the water.
You don't have a chance, Tess.
I'll even call you that to your face. Play the game your way this time. Win your trust. And just when you think you're safe, I'll come in for the kill. Tess starts away, then turns back.
Oh, yeah, Mom?
Maybe she's not as fickle as Cam suspected.
Yeah? I forgot to tell you, this friend of yours stopped by earlier.
Stopped by here?
Well, she was at our house, but she walked over with us hoping she might get to see you, but you weren't here.
Who was she?
I've never seen her before, but she said she knows you from back home. She was an older lady.
An older lady? Mom? The possibility that Brenda Neary might have come back for her at last is momentarily staggering. Now, when I need her so much. Then reality sets in. Cam remembers. She's not a bewildered, motherless little girl anymore. She's all grown up, with a daughter of her own and a baby on the way. Yes, and the hard-won wisdom that allowed her to accept, over a decade ago, that her mother is never coming back. So I think of her now. Because it's been a hell of a day, and I'm sad and scared and vulnerable and lonely, and I want my mommy. Who was the woman, Tess? She rests her thumb on her jaw and massages her brow with her fingertips, trying to hang in there.
Did she give you her name?
Yeah, it was Kathy. She's staying down here for a few days.
Kathy? Tess nods. Can it be Kathy from AA? Far more unsettling things have unfolded around Cam today. It would almost be par for the course to have her AA sponsor wander in on the drama. In fact, Cam might actually welcome Kathy right about now. Someone who's been in her shoes,
who understands what it's like to be under constant scrutiny by loved ones who aren't entirely convinced of her sobriety. Oh well, if Kathy is on the island, she's sure to pop up again sooner or later. All is quiet around the little gray house on Dolphin Avenue. It seems the whole neighborhood is at the barbecue down the street. That's why this is the perfect time to slip away and do a little browsing around the empty house. Amazingly, not only is the front door unlocked, but it's actually standing ajar. Cam obviously ran out of here in a hurry, and she crashed into the barbecue like a frazzled young mom who's just lost a toddler on the beach. Well, pregnant women do tend to overreact, hormones and all. Still, where was Cam this afternoon when she was supposed to be at the barbecue? According to someone at the party, who heard from a friend of a cop, Cam is involved, somehow, in the search for Rebecca Pearson. News about last night's Up Island disappearance is already hitting the local gossip mill. Rumors are flying, as rumors do in small communities. People are saying Rebecca ran away to Atlantic City, snuck out for a midnight swim and drowned, was kidnapped by a pedophile. As if they know a damn thing about it. Which is why the passing rumor about Cam being involved is meaningless. Why would she be involved? Why was she so frantically searching for Tess? Why indeed? Maybe she was afraid someone has figured out her little secret, that someone knows her precious daughter isn't really her daughter. The irony. No one suspected a thing until she showed up, discombobulated, frantically searching, and called undue attention to herself and to Tess. I might never have realized the truth if she hadn't done that. Oddly, it was almost as if Cam's frantic, premature search for a girl who has yet to go missing sealed her destiny. Now, however, isn't the time to stand around speculating. It's time to move past the packed duffel bag sitting just inside the door. The living room is in casual disarray, and the blinds are drawn, as if no one bothered to open them and tidy up in here this morning. On the coffee table beside an array of magazines, an empty glass, and a stack of marble notebooks. A quick perusal of the covers shows that they're all painstakingly dated with a range of months and years. The pages are covered in handwriting. Notes of some sort. There's a long gap between the notebook that reads February 1994 to October 1994 and the one that begins just last month without an end date. The first page of that one is filled with details written in blue ink, in careful script, details that, even at a preliminary glance, are disturbingly familiar. Blonde hair, purple backpack, held in stone-walled cellar. What? What is all this? What does it mean? At the bottom of the page, printed in black ink and circled, is a name. Leah Roby. John Murphy hates living alone. Hated it when he did it back before he married Helen, and hated it even more after they divorced. It's been years since she traded the small cedar-shingled cape on 22nd Street in Spray Beach for a condo across the causeway in Manahawkin. You'd think by now he'd like having the house to himself, but he doesn't. Most of the time he's too lonely to appreciate the perks, like not having to park his pickup truck on the street so she can park her car in the tiny driveway. Like being able to keep all his fishing gear right in the utility room instead of stored in the flimsy shed out back. Like watching bad movies on Cinemax late at night in bed, which is what he was doing earlier when he drifted off to sleep. Now he finds himself awake in the empty house, the movie long over, and an inexplicable restlessness drifting over him. He glances at the digital clock, wondering if he should just get up and go fishing. That's what he does most mornings, but not this early. It's never too early for fishing. That's what John's father, John Sr., used to say when he woke up his son in the wee hours as a boy. Dad was John's best friend in the world. He's been gone almost as long as Helen's been out of his life. These days, John fishes alone. It wouldn't seem right to have someone else out on the boat with him. He and Dad were a team. J. Murph 1 and J. Murph 2. With a sigh, John rolls onto his back, thinking he should get some sleep. In the instant before he closes his eyes, he sees a figure looming over his bed. Before he can open them again, it's all over.
Part 4. August.
Chapter 16. When Cam was a little girl, she and Ike went to a beach party here on the island. It was late August, maybe September. That day, under a cloudless blue sky, sparkling in the sunshine, the sea was calm and inviting, as warm as it ever gets on the Jersey coast. Cam remembers wading in to cool off as her father sat on the sand with his friends and a beer. She wore a blue bathing suit and had a cheap red plastic sand pail, and one of the little plastic prongs was broken off the rim, so the white plastic handle was dangling from one end. She'd had the pail all summer, and her father kept threatening to throw it away, but every time he did, she would cry. Chasing a little silvery fish, Cam tried to scoop it into the bucket, but it kept flitting just out of reach. She was careful not to go too far out, careful to keep her head above water. She couldn't swim. The fish kept darting past her outstretched hands with the broken pail. She edged her way toward it, perched on her tiptoes, bobbing in the gentle waves. Edged forward, though she could feel the ocean floor sloping down before her. She could feel the water pulling her inch by inch down the slope as she craned her neck, struggling not to go under. She knew she was losing the battle. She was sure she was going to drown. Right here on Long Beach Island, on a gorgeous late summer day, in the midst of all these people, not one of them, not even her own father, aware that she was in trouble. The memory has haunted Cam for a month. Ever since the day Rebecca Pearson disappeared and she had the premonition about Tess and came home that night to find that one of her notebooks, the most recent one, with the notes about Leah Roby and Rebecca Pearson, seemed to be missing. It hasn't turned up since. A lifeguard pulled Cam out of the water that long ago day. "You're lucky to be alive, little girl," she remembers him saying. "Where's your mother?"
"I don't have a mother."
Even then, she comprehended the knowing, sympathetic look he gave her. If she'd had a mother, the lifeguard was thinking, she would never have had such a close call. She recalls standing there on the sand, drenched, still coughing salt water out of her lungs, and watching the broken red bucket drift out to sea, wanting it back, needing it back. Mothers watch over their children, keep them safe. Now, resting a hand against the aching small of her back, Cam stands on the beach, making sure Tess is still sitting on a blanket down the way with her boyfriend. Bare upper arms touching, heads tilted close together, she and Heath are talking intensely about something, as usual. Tess is safe, and Cam is watching. Who is Camden Hastings, really? The question lingers even now, a full month after it became apparent that she's been harboring a child posing as her own, along with a bizarre collection of notebooks. The older handwritten notes weren't of nearly as much concern as the current, dated this summer. Why was Cam so interested in both Leah Roby and Rebecca Pearson? Can she possibly know? If she does, she's not letting on. There's a ragged edge where the third page was torn from the notebook. What was written there? Where is it now? It's all very unsettling. Maybe Cam's got a secret identity as a cop? A private investigator? Some kind of bleeding heart advocate for teenaged runaways? Hard to tell. If Cam does know, though, she might be planning to bolt and take her so-called daughter, Tess, with her. That's why something needs to be done soon. Now. Tonight. Before she disappears again. August, in the city of brotherly love. Hot asphalt, cold fountains, fruit-flavored water ices, open windows and open hydrants in row house neighborhoods, museum docents in colonial garb leading packs of camera-toting tourists on cobblestone walking tours. I can't wait to get out of here tomorrow, Lucinda tells Neil as they head away from the UPenn campus, down 39th Street toward the parking lot and their respective cars.
Lucky you.
You're going away too, aren't you? Next week? Neil's bushy gray brows furrow.
To my daughter's in Scranton, so we can watch the twins while she has the baby. Some vacation.
Who are you kidding? You love all those grandkids.
I don't love Scranton. 61 years old and I've never been west of Pennsylvania. I'd kill to go on a 10-day Alaskan cruise right about now.
Neil wipes a bead of sweat from his balding head. It's only 7 days, not 10. Lucinda had originally considered going for 10, but decided a full week of solitude at sea, if there is such a thing as solitude on a floating behemoth with 3,000 other people, will probably be enough.
7, 10, Alaska in August. You're one smart cookie, Sin.
No one but Neil ever calls her Sin. Or a smart cookie. Glancing affectionately at the curmudgeon who's become a father figure these past few years, she wants to tell him he's got it all wrong. She isn't taking a cruise to the far reaches of Alaska because she's smart. She's doing it because she's running scared. Back in Philly, after seeing Randy again last month, she did her best to get back to business as usual. Edgy, distracted, she realized the energy she normally channels into her work was draining into a useless reservoir of feelings for a married man. Something had to be done. Wallowing isn't her style. Fabulous vacations are. One thing she's wanted for years, aside from Randall Barakat, is to visit Alaska. So she booked a suite on board the Norwegian Star, and off she goes, tomorrow. Today means taking care of business with Neil, who summoned her to help find a missing sorority girl. Lucinda just spent 3 hours roaming around the Theta Delta something house and talking to the sisters, to no avail. The only image that popped into her head was Randy's, repeatedly, and she did her best to push him right back out again. She hasn't spoken to him since Long Beach Island. A few times she thought of calling, just to check in, see if there are any new developments on the Rebecca Pearson case. She doesn't need him for that, though. Thanks to the internet, she knows there are no developments. Rebecca hasn't been found. She never will be. Of that, Lucinda remains certain. Nothing for her to do but move on, put all that happened on Long Beach Island behind her. Rebecca, Randy, even Cam Hastings. She's been in the back of Lucinda's mind for weeks. She and her daughter. A few times Lucinda considered calling to see how they are, just to make sure things are all right. But why bother? The day is coming when things won't be all right. Sooner or later, something's going to happen to Cam's daughter. Lucinda has seen it over and over. What is she supposed to do about it? Sit around and wait for something to happen so she can say, I told you so, if only to herself? She can only hope the fresh Alaskan air clears her head so she can get back to work after the trip. Make sure you keep me posted on this case, Neil, she tells him as they reach the parking lot and prepare to go their separate ways.
Didn't anyone ever tell you that you should leave the real world behind when you go on vacation?
Why do you think I'm going all the way to Alaska?
Sounds to me like you might be running away from home.
I ran away from home once already in my life. Neil, who grew up over in 2 Street, a family neighborhood between Society Hill and South Philly, has been a part of Lucinda's real world from the start. He knows all about her past, how she gladly exchanged the Sloanes' gilded fantasy world for the real world, how her family never understood her, never forgave her. I have to get going. I've still got to pack, run some errands, pay the bills.
Safe travels, Neil says gruffly, giving her a hug. Give my regards to Mount Hood.
That's in Oregon.
I told you I've never been out west.
Someday you should go. Take Irma. She'll want to bring all the grandkids along.
So will you, Lucinda accuses, and he grins. Patting her on the arm, he says, maybe you'll meet Mr. Wright on the boat and give your parents some grandkids of their own someday soon.
That's about as likely as my parents taking a bunch of grandkids on an Alaskan cruise.
Hey, you never know.
Sometimes, Lucinda thinks, you do.
Is she still there? Gwen asks Cam from under the umbrella.
Still there, Cam confirms, shielding her eyes from the sun as she checks on Tess and Heath again.
Still madly in love? Petra wants to know, sitting beside Gwen.
Still madly in love.
Yawning, Cam eases herself way back down into her seat, wondering why sand chairs always have to be so low. If summer wasn't going to be over with by the time she enters her third trimester, she'd have to start carrying a director's chair to the beach. Tired? Gwen asks as Cam yawns again.
Yeah, I slept from 8 to 8, but I swear I could take a nap right here, right now.
Go ahead.
Can't. Have to keep tabs on Frankie and Annette down there.
Who?
Didn't you ever see Beach Blanket Bingo? She asks Petra.
Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello on the beach, falling in love?
Nope.
Is that the one where Eric Von Kipper kidnaps the singing star, Sugarcane?
Kidnaps.
It doesn't take much to jar Cam out of a momentary lapse in hypervigilance. 8 to 8? Gwen asks, as Cam leans forward to check Tess again. You went to bed? At 8?
I could have gone at 7. I'm exhausted lately. I haven't seen 9 o'clock in a week.
So I guess the whole beach blanket bingo scene isn't keeping you up nights, then?
No, but it keeps me on my toes the rest of the time. I guess it wouldn't be so bad if it were winter. But this whole summer romance thing, all that tanned skin, hardly any clothes, it's not good.
Definitely not, Petra says, shaking her head. Thanks to Frankie and Annette down there, I've got Tyler moping around like a lovelorn Charlie Brown, poor kid.
Wait, I don't get it.
Gwen touches her cheek with her forefinger and furrows her brows in exaggerated confusion. Is Tess supposed to be Annette or the little red-haired girl?
Red-haired girl. Rebecca Pearson. At the thought of her, a familiar sick feeling engulfs Cam. There's been no sign of Rebecca in the month since she vanished. At first, the apparent kidnapping was the biggest news story on the island. It was all anyone could talk about. The police didn't release all the details Cam was privy to during the initial investigation. There was no mention of the shark's tooth necklace or secret admirer in published reports, and certainly no mention of Lucinda Sloane or Cam Hastings. Yet, to her surprise, a few people have asked Cam in passing if she was involved in the search. Local gossip travels faster here than it does back home. She denied any involvement, of course, and she never mentioned it to anyone, not even Tess. Then, maybe 2 days after Rebecca Pearson disappeared, her story was overshadowed by another headline. Local man slain in bed. It was almost unheard of. A cold-blooded murder right in Beach Haven. The victim, John Murphy, a long-divorced, middle-aged elementary school teacher who lived alone on 22nd Street in adjacent Spray Beach. No suspect or possible motive, aside from robbery. John Murphy's wallet was missing. It was later found, minus whatever cash might have been in it, in a construction dumpster just over the causeway in Bayside. Randall Barricat, one of the detectives assigned to the case, was quoted in the paper as speculating that the robbery might have been staged, though why anyone would want John Murphy dead is anyone's guess. Even John Murphy's ex-wife claimed he didn't have an enemy in the world. It wasn't as if he had gambling debts, a drug habit, a married lover. He was just a nice, quiet guy who was a Eucharistic minister at his church and an avid bird watcher and fisherman. Yet someone shot him point blank in the head as he slept. That just goes to show that anything can happen to anyone, anywhere, anytime. The newspapers played down both the disappearance of Rebecca Pearson and the murder of John Murphy as time went on.
It was no great white attack, but local business owners were concerned about the potential impact on the tourist trade. The powers that be must have put tremendous pressure on Detective Barraquette to solve the murder and or find the missing girl. Certain the latter isn't even a remote possibility, Cam drags her thoughts back to her friend's banter.
Maybe we can introduce Tyler to Casey when she comes down next week, Petra is telling Gwen. Do you still have that picture I can show him?
I do, but remember, she's an older woman.
How old is she again?
15.
Who knows, Gwen says.
Maybe Tess will ditch the hunky lifeguard and fall in love with Tyler.
And maybe, Petra replies flatly, it'll be the other way around.
Tyler's already in love with Tess.
No, I mean maybe the hunky lifeguard will ditch her. Debbie keeps telling you to brace yourself for the big breakup, Cam.
Maybe Debbie should be bracing herself for the day when Beth's hunky lifeguard ditches her, Cam says. All three of them look over at the white wooden tower, where Beth, supermodelish in a leopard skin bikini, is leaning and talking to Jared, her summer flame.
I want a hunky lifeguard, Gwen declares, grinding her soda can into the sand so it won't tip over.
Everyone else has one.
I don't have a hunky lifeguard.
Petra doesn't.
I don't even have a life, Petra says wryly.
Yeah, well, who does when you're pushing 40 and raising kids on your own? Cam asks.
Debbie does,
Gwen and Petra say it in unison, and they all laugh. The fourth member of their single mom summer quartet is back to jetting all over the globe several days a week, leaving Beth and Jonathan here in the care of